Tony Greer, editor of The Morning Navigator. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back, Tom. How you doing, man?
Excellent. It's a busy, crazy time. There's no shortage of, I feel like, things to talk about, things to be distracted by, things to try to pay attention to, things to try to take into account. How about yourself, Tony?
You know, I've been saying to my friends, 2026 just keeps freaking bringing it. Like in every direction, from every angle, like you said, you know, there's the stuff to pay attention to. There's a vast list of distractions to ignore. It's just fucking harried. 2026 is all I can say, from the markets to real life, you know.
I couldn't agree more. There's so much going on, not only in the markets, personal life as well. But I think, you know, I was listening to a recent podcast that you did, and you brought up this amazing saying that I think is so perfect right now. And that was, don't worry about being right, worry about getting it right. What does that mean to you right now in this market?
Oh, man, that saves my life sometimes. You know, we get attached to the idea that our thoughts have to be correct. And the reality is that your P&L has to be correct. You know, you thought, you don't have to be wrong. Nobody really cares. Nobody gives a shit. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. Right. So if you have an idea and the market is proving either that you're right or that you're wrong, pay more attention to what the market is saying than what people think about what you say or something. You know what I mean? It's like, I really don't care if I go on the tape and say the stock market is about to crash. And I wake up the next morning and it's going up and I buy it and I make 30% on that trade. And everybody says to me, hey, you thought it was going to crash, right? And I go, that's funny. I said that yesterday. Today I'm making money, right? I got proven wrong yesterday. Today we're making money, man. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting it right. I don't care what I think. So that's kind of how that translates to me in street terms. That's fair.
Well, and I think, especially from a trader's perspective, like you guys are, right? You're in and out, let's say, several times a day, as I understand it. So yep. being that nimble, you have to be able to change your mind like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. When presented with new information, intelligent people change their mind, you know, and that's the part of trading that's, you know, it's always morphing. The part of trading that's, you know, comes from the creative side of your brain. You know, it's not all crunching numbers and oil barrels and bushels of wheat, you know, rather quite the opposite. You know, it's more about like hearing the markets and understanding sentiment and positioning. You know, that's where you become a real analyst that makes people money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot harder to, you know, lay out views about what you think is going to happen than it is to react to what's going on, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, and I think these markets have surprised a lot of people. So, Tony, what do you think wakes the world and or maybe not the world, but the markets up to this potential global energy crisis that we are facing here?
You know,
just to add some context, you know, we're looking out at something that is a little bit longer term, a little bit further out, but it's not being, I don't think, priced into the markets the way one would expect at this point. So obviously you need to be nimble, but where does that rubber hit the road, do you think?
This is a hairy scenario because we are kind of heading very certainly towards some type of spike in energy prices due to inventories being depleted, due to the strait being closed, right? That's like the logical path of thinking. And I think the hard part that people can't get their heads around is that the market is always so forward looking and how come all of a sudden it can't see this? And I feel like the only way I can explain it is having gone traded through a couple of supply disruptions and run to the store for toilet paper scenarios. And the shortage doesn't hit until the analyst at JP Morgan can't get his morning cappuccino in time or fill up his beamer. Well, once that happens to somebody in the markets that's going to project it, they're going to be like, oh my God, why can't I get gas today? Right? Because it's odds and evens. Why is that? Oh, well, because prices spiked and they're rationing. Oh, okay. Now we have a problem today. Mm-hmm. Not until the guy go. If I get my Starbucks tomorrow on time and it lands on the counter, boom, and I park my car and I'm going to work, I don't really care if a shortage is coming. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah,
I don't care. There's no. I can't affect my day. I can't have that wreck my day. So I feel like that's how the market is looking at it, for right or for wrong. And maybe it's pricing in a quick resolution of it. You know, it kind of won't go hook, line, and sinker towards the idea of prolonged gas prices for much longer, where it feels like every day that the strait is closed, that seems like it's got to increase in probability incrementally every day. So the market's making it difficult on all of us, mm-hmm. like it always does, you know, and it's kind of, it might be one of the cases where the market goes in the direction that puts people in the most pain. Right. And everybody came out of that Iran war curl over initially and said, oh, OK, we're going to war. This is going to go down. That's going to go down. They all got short in a hole. And Trump is bullshitting his way through ceasefires, peace talks, blah, blah, blah. We're going to bomb them into, you know, we're going to bomb them into oblivion next week. Tomorrow, we're going to postpone the bombing into oblivion. So he's trying to buy time. And I think that that's what's confusing the markets a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and then you read that he's taking all this risk and he's trading his way right through this whole entire thing. And you want to lose your mind, but that's going to get away from the topic. And that leads me to also believe the guy could be tweeting his way out of bad positions.
Right.
Because I don't really think that he cares that, you know, the market's affecting other people than his P&L. And I could be wrong, but anyway, I think I might be getting a little too far off track there. I'm not sure.
I did see a clip the other day where there was a reporter that actually asked him, how do you think that this, like, do you consider that the war is going to be affecting Americans' pocketbooks right now? And he says, I don't really care.
Yeah.
He literally said that.
That was so tough. I heard it. Oh man, you know, we're in this world where there's not the guy can't say anything that escapes you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's worse than like, I don't know if you heard this or not. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't have a choice. You know what I mean? Like that's the world we live in today. So that's frustrating. It's more frustrating to hear him say it, you know, a billionaire president getting richer by the day and enriching his family every day, saying that he doesn't really care. I mean, that is, I guess it goes hand in hand with, you know, the dramatic change that's overcome his personality since he was elected, mm-hmm. you know, that's a whole nother podcast probably, but I mean, I don't mind going on the record saying that I feel that he's been severely compromised and it's a longer discussion than that, you know, but this is not the guy that was on the campaign trail for the last 3 years that we know.
Well, I think it would be very difficult for anybody to be able to disagree with that, I think. And the fact that there's so much of this emotion and everything wrapped up into it, I think is difficult. It makes things more difficult. But at the end of the day, I also think that exactly all the stuff we just talked about ends up being overall ends up being a distraction, right? Because it doesn't actually end up affecting you, because if you watch his actions, you can already tell that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it does. A lot of that does go in the noise cancel. You know, I mean, I'm trying to keep his whole entire Truth Social account in the noise cancellation policy, quite honestly. But it is moving markets. And when markets move and you can't explain it and that becomes the explanation, you're like, oh, you know, I have to keep an eye out for that. You know, you don't want to get blindsided. So everybody has to have a quarter of an eye on the Trump tape.
Yeah.
It's been emotional and frustrating to hear him go 0 for campaign promises, you know, and his watching his approval rating tank into the fucking basement. So, yeah.
But I think that also speaks towards this idea of headline sensitivity rather than being necessarily data driven, right? And I think kind of going back to this, the Starbucks and not getting gas for your Beamer example, I think it also speaks to the, you know, the hyper financialization of these markets. And the scenario that we've gotten to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, it's something that's affecting everybody. Everybody's got their Twitter machine and then barking out their way, you know, however they're negotiating what's going on. And that's a fair way to look at it. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit treacherous right now.
So
but I think that go ahead.
Tony, when you're trying to get a handle of, let's say, your daily plan or your weekly plan here, what are some of the things that are useful to you in order to make these decisions and make a plan for what you're going to do, let's say, for the day or for the week?
You know, what's been useful to me is looking at the constructive nature of the oil chart and not necessarily, you know, we came into the Iran war with the idea that, you know, we had leadership in oil services and metals and mining and commodities, semiconductor bubbles getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We had that leadership. And then going into the Iran war, oil stocks and energy and oil services took over that metals and mining trade that had a reprice due to higher energy costs, mm-hmm. right? And the semiconductor bubble never burst through that whole entire thing. In fact, it expanded. So that is kind of like batshit crazy to see that expanding, tech expanding into a rising rate environment. You know, so that's one of the dynamics that's been, you know, just sticking with the crude oil chart and saying, nope, it's not, we're not going back to 75, 85. You know, and the straight close another day. Yes, it is. Oil backed off. No, it hasn't. Okay, this is now we're going in the new direction, which is, you know, we've got to back the industrial miners and industrials off further. We've got to buy the energy stocks up even more. And then tech is kind of a mixed bag, but tech is finally feeling a little bit of pain from higher rates now. So I guess, you know, it's like I'm kind of constantly, you know, now that headline inflation is back as of last week's CPI, PPI, I got a feeling that that's going to be the beginning of a trend of kind of inflation surprises. And then we start looking a little bit more like 2022, where technology finally succumbs to higher interest rates. Portfolios have to adjust for less growth stocks. And they move into value stocks. And we look a lot like 2022, where the S&P went down, you know, 15% led by big tech, and the entire natural resources board was up between 20 and 50%. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't rule out that scenario. You know, headline inflation is generally green light go for traders to buy hard commodities and hard assets. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if it pans out that way again this time.
Do you try to look at, let's say, a longer term approach to something like that? Or do you personally just look at it day to day?
Obviously, things are pretty day to day right now with the straight closure. And yeah. I think you kind of have to expand your time frame, whether you like it or not right now, because it doesn't seem like a peace agreement is going to equal full capacity traffic in the strait forevermore, mm-hmm. right? Like I doubt that Trump comes out and says, okay, we've reached an agreement, and then we never see a tanker get blown up by the Iranian army. You know what I mean? Like that's definitely going to happen. So now we're going to come out of this with a pinched strait, right? It's not going to operate at full capacity, I don't think, for a very long time. And that forces you to kind of think out further. Like, all right, high oil prices higher for longer. This is not a spike witch's hat where it goes up and back down in the same time frame. This is likely higher for longer. And interest rate charts and crude oil charts are corroborating that, right? Crude oil won't back off. And interest rate charts are up and to the right, breaking out from their recent ranges as of the inflation prints. So we're going to now go and find a new high in rates, see what the market can tolerate. And then we're just back to looking at the oil price again.
Yeah, it's such an insane time. And yeah. Tony, when, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned this idea of repricing miners because of higher energy costs, right? If we look at gold miners, for example, they've backed off a fair amount, but yet they printed incredible margin expansion over the first quarter, right? And even if you double the energy cost, they're still at record margins. So, you know, is that just a reaction, an emotional reaction by the market? Or, you know, how do we try and understand why they need to sell off like that?
So being bullish miners is your view.
Fair.
That's what you're saying. And I think that's fair. It's totally fair to have that view, because you're saying that we've got enough margin in the tank. And why do they necessarily have to reprice so much for slightly higher energy prices? What does that tell me? If your view is correct, then gold miners are dirt cheap right now. Like dirt freaking cheap. What are they doing? Collapsing.
Especially
buy some. It's a buy.
Yeah.
If you're right, then gold miners are the best buy on the board. And I happen to agree with you. Not to talk my book or tell you what I'm doing around these levels, but I happen to agree with you. Mm-hmm. Right? You're bullish gold miners with the view that this price of $4,500 isn't even baked into their earnings yet, right? Like they've got dollars of gold price in the tank that they're not even worried about using yet. And now, you know, energy prices are 30% higher. Like, so what? You know what I mean? It's not stopping anybody from buying gas. So it's definitely going to not stop gold miners from pulling gold out of the ground for $5,000 a freaking ounce.
Yeah.
So you're right. They're dirt cheap here. That's what I think too.
Yeah.
If they're
pulling it out for $5,000 an ounce and their cost is likely under $2,000 an ounce, that math sure makes sense, right?
Plenty of room in there for financial accounting wizardry at earnings time, right? Sounds like there's plenty of room, wiggle room all over the margin for higher energy prices or whatever. You know what I mean? They'll be like, oh, okay, just reprice gold $10 higher on our book and we'll cover all of that and more. $10.
Yeah.
Like, I literally think it's that kind of scenario. So what does that tell me? These collapsing miners on my screen are dirt cheap. Can they get cheaper? Yeah, man. You know, everybody's long them. We're gonna have to puke out the last in to the trade of I want to be long miners because of inflation, right? So now we're gonna have a head fake. We're gonna shake everybody out of the miners, and then gold is gonna explode off of the trend lines once it finally gets to them and meets them, and buyers show up, and all of a sudden we force it higher to the next leg again. You know, that step function seems to be pretty reliable.
Yeah, it's interesting to consider, as you said, the last in and also easiest out traders, right?
They rang the bell. They're like, oh, I got into this trade. It's supposed to be the right trade. Now I'm down 25%. I never saw the light of day. Mm-hmm. What a trader, you know, what are you forced to do in that scenario? Get out. You know, if that's how a hedge fund or a portfolio manager played it that way, they're wrong and they're going to have to pivot, you know? So I think we could probably expect some of that.
So do you think the like gold and silver are acting as the ballast that you want to see them acting as at this point?
Yeah, you know, that's a great way of putting it, because I've been saying to people, you know, that are, I have a lot of clients that, you know, my book is positioned in the view matrix, right? Which is my book at the back of the Navigator that I write. I'm positioned, I just got stopped out of uranium miners, but I am also positioned long solar stocks, industrial miners, gold miners, and gold on my pad right now and managing that risk. They're all winning trades. I've advised everyone that we're going to be under pressure. I've advised people that into support, I think it's probably worth adding. And I am going to have to get out on a trading perspective just to get out. But you guys know me. I'm not afraid to get back in again. Mm-hmm. You see, I have a make-believe badge that I still clip to my neck every morning when I start trading, just like the TGNY badge that I had on the floor of the Mercantile Exchange. And the badge allows me to wake up the next day and buy my position back if I think it was right.
Right.
I'm not afraid to do that. I talk to a lot of people that like they can't sell something because if they sell it, that means the door closes on ever owning it again. And like, I can't even get my head around that kind of a idea. So it's easy for me to buy this stuff back.
But that also comes with experience and doing that every day like you do, right?
100%. It comes with coughing them up in the little washing machine here. You know what I mean? That happens. Sometimes you get taken out, but you got to be responsible, because my number one responsibility is not to be a bag holder. You know, I've gotten caught. I've been a bag holder in like individual stocks early in my investing career, and I've actually worn investments to zero. You know, I bought this, a buddy of mine told me to get long this ophthalmic company at like 11 cents. And you can imagine, you know, I was starting to make money, and you can imagine how much I bought for 11 cents to see the thing go to 17 cents to be up a lot of money. And then to see the thing go bankrupt in 6 months and all my money is gone.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, that's something that I've learned that I'll never have happen again. Yeah. Right. So I get out of stuff and I say, okay, let's refresh it. And then I'll say, okay, let's get back into that. I feel safe. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
So Tony, on the, you know, on, let's say, opposing gold mining stocks that are puking right now, do you think that the energy interest and momentum that has been built into a lot of the energy stocks and energy services companies is, you know, getting a little bit overbaked and caution could be warranted there? Or, you know, is this kind of a longer play as well?
I don't know. I kind of feel like oil prices have an excuse to be a little bit higher for longer. So I want to respect that. You know, I try, you know, it's hard. It's hard to have a view that long. Like, no matter what, my positioning and trading, tactical trading, is going to work the same. You know, I'm going to get into the, oh, and I'm long energy too. XLE, I forgot to say that. That's another position, which I'm confident about now because it's proven today and yesterday that sector is breaking out again. So where was I going with this, Tom?
The energy sector and being overweight oil services companies.
Yeah, so I'm not necessarily in the camp that those are done or have to be done anytime soon. You know, I'm much more in the camp of Louis Gove, who wrote a great piece called Shattered Assumptions a couple of months ago. And it talks about a lot of the assumptions in global trade being completely shattered by the Trump administration, which is observably true. Like, he's onto something. And what his thesis is essentially that you have to have an energy hedge in your portfolio. It's no longer negotiable. That the assumptions of global trade have changed so much that now you have to have a 20% allocation to energy in your portfolio. And in some ways, that sounds really relevant to what's going on. I mean, Trump did change, you know, what's going on here isn't like a battle with Iran over the strait. He's changing the global trade table, right? He's trying to make the North American continent the number one source for global oil. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely not just, okay, we're over here taking out Iran for the fourth time because of their nuclear capability. Like, that's not it, I don't think. So, you know, this does lend itself to oil prices going maybe lower and gas getting cheaper again. But I still think that the powerhouse energy companies are going to be set up for massive success in like an energy renaissance type of period here in the U.S. So that's just a idea that I have. It's not worth much, but
well, it's definitely something that I think is on everyone's radar and it's worth paying attention to and also, you know, not being religious about.
True. Yeah, it's worth exploring and you know, being able to drop it if it looks like it's a wrong idea, you know. So it's tricky. But Trump is doing something that's, you know, the one thing that's bigger than Trump that he may be a part of or not is that globalism is dead. Right. And you can't discount that because it was 20 years of an overbearing force that put value in the markets where markets wouldn't necessarily value things. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're coming out of that period and the market's going to start valuing things differently versus other securities. And I just think that we're still in the first two innings of that, you know, in this first 2 years of Trump's career, and that there's going to be a lot, first 2 years of Trump's second term. And that there could be like a really long adjustment period to what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can deny that there are major tail risks here. And I mean, like, let's diving into that a little bit more. What are some of the biggest, let's say, secondary consequences of the strait being closed? You know, we see 30% of the world's sulfuric acid come out of the strait. 30% of the world's helium, a good amount of the world's fertilizer, things like that. Not to mention, you know, the petrochemicals as well.
Sounds like a food and medicine crisis is coming our way, Tom, in some shape, way, shape or form. You know, I'm going to try to be, you know, ready for that if and when it happens. But there seems like there's going to be some kind of inflation spike coming, you know, due to the strait being closed for so long. We're going to have to deal with that. You know, that's the delayed reaction that we haven't seen yet that you're talking about. If that doesn't come to pass, I think we'll probably consider ourselves lucky But I mean, you know, those that's where the resources are being directed, and it's everybody's got to make sure their portfolio is prepared for that. Mm-hmm. You know, I still think that there, you know, the potential for this 2022 type trade to continue on longer is really here now with the way we're set up in like technology, right? With this massive AI bubble being blown to God knows how big, and they still don't have a great way to monetize it. And the valuations are getting bigger, and it just seems like something that's not going to end in an upward move. Mm-hmm.
Well,
so yeah, go ahead.
When you guys look at, let's say, AI and tech in particular here, one would expect that, you know, a basically vertical move up would also necessitate a complementary vertical move down. But
yeah,
when do you, or would you ever go short that? And what would you need to see to start shorting that?
Yeah, I think that that's something that's definitely very worth shorting, because that's one of those trades that you look back on and you're like, oh my God, while oil was exploding and it only got to like 105, there was this outrageous rally in semiconductors, and we knew that tech was about to get crushed from higher interest rates. And how the hell did we not know to wail away at that semiconductor bid? Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of those. It's going to be just like when home builders picked their head up a couple of weeks ago and just like exploded into like absurd resistance levels. And you're taking a look at it and you're like, man, aren't we headed for higher rates? Like, where are they going? Where are they now? New lows.
Yeah.
And it's like 20% lower. You know, it's like the market sticks its chin out like that and makes you go, oh my God, what do I do? And the reality is that you're supposed to be going, ooh la la, yours, man, you know? So, excuse my French. I get excited.
A good opportunity to sell into, right?
Without a doubt, you know? And especially if you're long, you know, I got caught a little bit long this, you know, natural resources trade. So I've been able to be short a little bit of tech for the last couple of days and make some money back. So that's been encouraging, knock wood. But I'm looking to cover that because I think the other stuff is all going to come back to life, and tech might too. So we'll see.
I want to go back to, you know, how we're actually, or how you're thinking about that, Tony, if you wouldn't mind. Like, what do you think actually, let's say, confirms a larger move down where you're more comfortable being short tech in a meaningful way? Like, does that trend have to really reverse for you to let's say, pile into it?
You know, it's definitely, you know, I'd have to check the, first of all, it's going to be one of these, Tom. It's either going to tee itself up for a capitulation sale, or I'm going to miss a big chunk of the move down and be happy with the obvious move that I catch.
Yeah.
So my point being, this sector is going up and up and up and up like this. God forbid we get a gap higher to a new high on NVIDIA earnings tonight. I will literally mortgage my house to short that stock at a new high. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that could be the beginning of the bubble breaking, right? It'll definitely break on good earnings being first wrongfully perceived as good news. And then the close shows that NVIDIA took those good earnings and it turned into a negative price move.
Right.
You know what that is? That's the end of the bull market run. So when we finally see one of those, you know, if we get a bursting gap higher in semiconductors, that's where I'll have a good chance to take a shot at it and hit it. And if it's something where NVIDIA is kind of curling over and then it gets knocked down from earnings and never recovers and goes down from there, then I'm not going to make much on the move. But the rest of my portfolio will hopefully compensate for that and come back to life. So missing it and having it happen won't be the end of the world, but I'd love to see this thing tee itself up for a massive gap higher short potential. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I participate in whenever I can. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the disconnections that add up to a lot of money very quickly.
So Tony, when we consider the commodities prices, the oil price, all of this thing, all of these different factors kind of coming into this era, let's say, obviously we're headed for higher inflation. You know, we see PPI come out, we see CPI come out noticeably higher. Are we heading for an era of, you know, markedly higher inflation. And how do we try to, you know, make an analog for the type of environment we're heading into?
We've got one, 2022. To answer the first question, A is, I think no matter what, you have the position for continued inflation prints. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think you have to worry about that at some level. You have to look at your portfolio and be like, okay, can I withstand a dislocation in the bond market that gets tech wrecked, you know, and things like that. And so, yeah, you know, this, what's the analog? The analog is 2022, man, you know, and it just never followed through from there because technology came back to life with the AI trade and everything like that. So, you know, you got to be flexible. You know, you got to be flexible. Time's going to march on, but it's not going to necessarily march on according to your plans. You know, so you go into the trade with open ears and say, okay, I think it might be it for the tech run, and then pay very close attention to what's going on around you because it may not be. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw a perfect scenario for the tech run to be over and then NVIDIA to finally curl over, and it just put in a 20% leg up into oncoming traffic of a market selling off. Tell me about that one. You know, like, this is really hard to figure out. You got to be flexible enough to survive it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, as we're kind of talking about this, my mind is wandering to this era where it was all about the Fed. Everybody paid attention to every move, every word that was uttered out of Powell's mouth. Now we seem to be in a different era where we're the only thing we're worried about is, you know, Trump's Truth Social account. Is the Fed still worth paying attention to? And what do you think the effect of their next rate move is going to have?
You know, I'm not good at predicting rate moves. And so I stopped trying. I like to just let the market do that and kind of react to what happens. But it feels like inflation is going to force their hand and it's going to be really politically impalatable to raise rates. You know, it's like, he's going to have to raise rates and he's going to have Trump barking at him, you know, the whole way. I'm not sure how that plays out. Mm-hmm. I'm really not. Yeah, of course, you got to keep an eye on it. You know, people always say the Fed is backed into a corner. But, you know, if you control money supply and you control the narrative, I don't think you're ever backed into a corner. So I think that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the Fed is probably as indecisive as we are as to whether the headline inflation is going to continue or is it not. And then we've got this massive objective reality of the strait being closed, staring us in the face, telling us, yeah, it is. It's definitely going to. You know, we just can't believe it because we can't see it and the market can't see it yet. We'll find out eventually, man.
So as the denominator of basically all of these markets, the value of all of these markets, the dollar has been kind of in this sideways churning pattern for the last couple months here. With yields heading higher, especially, you know, today when we're talking on the 19th of May here, you know, is the dollar and rates something that you're considering as well?
Yeah, those are, you know, Tom, those are, I consider those odometers on my dashboard. Mm-hmm. You know, they're different dials on my dashboard, interest rates and the dollar. They tell me how much risk I can take in the commodity space. You know, like, I just got beat up because higher rates caused a higher dollar to cause gold to get knocked down, to cause everybody to get out of their metals and mining. Right. So I have to pay attention to it. I'm not going to trade the dollar. I'm just going to look at it and use it and say, that's a headwind for me today. That's a tailwind for me today. That sucks for me today. This is going to make me think twice about having this view. You know, so it's something that it's just a gauge because I'm not really an active or interested interest rate or FX trader.
Yeah.
You know, that's not where I make money. I make money trading the charts and stocks.
It just helps you kind of figure out which way the wind is blowing, right?
Yeah, well, I just want to know if they're going to be a headwind or a tailwind to the trade that's developing. And of course, it gets weighed very heavily, mm-hmm. right? If I get bullish home builders, which I was, and wanted to go with a move higher, which I didn't, the only reason I didn't is because aren't rates going to go a lot higher? Like, we got to get higher rates, like, right? So it protected me from piling into a move higher in home builders that I would have gotten roasted on. So it has that kind of effect, right? And, you know, I've learned that you can't let it have that really, really good steering effect for you if you're managing and getting in and out of risk in those securities. You know, you don't let a dollar move higher tell you to ease up on your commodity risk if you're also short dollars and that's killing you too. You're like, oh God, my whole book's blowing up. What's going on? You know, so you have to respect it. Mm-hmm. You have to respect it. But if you have the trade on, it's more likely to screw up everything else. Or think about it the other way. You're long the dollar and now commodities that you're also long are going down. So which one do you sell? Mm-hmm.
Which one do you sell and which one do you buy more of? Because
right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, you know, okay, so I got to do this because this, but wait, that's conflicting this view. I don't know what to do next. So, you know, that stuff all plays into it. I don't want to have a position in that stuff when I'm wielding around considerable risk in the stock market. Mm-hmm.
So Tony, what are, you know, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, what are some of the, let's say the markets that you look at first thing in the morning to kind of make that plan for the day? What are those indicators to give you ideas for the day?
Man, I wish I could pull this camera off the tripod and show you that I have six screens in front of me that are positioned in the same way, in the same colors that they've been for 33 years now since I got my Bloomberg for the first time. And what I have is I have short-term charts. They're 15-minute charts over the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any indicators on them. They just have price levels. And I have the dollar next to 10-year yields. And below that, I have crude oil next to the gold price and then next to the gold chart. And below that, I have the copper price next to the S&P. So I essentially wake up in the morning, turn the screen on, and literally just the moves that get carved onto the screens. You know, because you have this muscle memory, like my memory has this scrolling memory of this tape for 30 years now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So every time it moves this much, my brain is like, whoa, there it goes. You know, and so literally looking at these six screens and seeing how they're reacting overnight, my game plan materializes, right? Like first, where's the risk? Where am I going to get beat up today? And what am I doing about it? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm getting beat up in this. Okay, what am I doing about it? The decision chain. Okay, if it's down here, I'm getting out. If it's up here, I'm going to buy more. Right? Having that game plan. But it's definitely turning on the six screens and kind of reacting. How correct is my view this morning?
Right.
How much do I have to do to get out of trouble? Right. That's essentially the first step. And then the things that are working kind of work themselves out behind the scenes. It's kind of like the last thing you think of and you look up and then you're like, oh yeah, I haven't had to think of that because it's working and everything's, I got this portion of it right. You know?
Tony, you recently had I guess it's not that recent, but in March you had your first conference. What are some of the biggest lessons that you walked away with now that you've had time to digest it?
Man, it's not financial, Tom, but the biggest lesson that I walked away with was that people are starving for personal connection. People are excited to speak face to face with one another. Mm-hmm. Their handshake goes out automatically to meet new people. And like my conference was just this buzzing network that was like a cross between like a networking event and a wedding, because everybody was talking to everybody and there was networking and connections and business cards flying back and forth. And that was really rewarding. So that was the human side of coming away from the conference. And then if we use the conference indicator, where we had seven different speakers from different backgrounds with different approaches to the world give presentations. And if you had to draw a conclusion, the conclusion was you got to own gold and gold miners, right? So we should have known that that was a sentiment fade, at least in gold miners at the time. And there was valuable information in that. And the cool part is that, you know, behind the scenes as we speak and as I tweeted today, I'm about to announce the second conference, the second TG Macro Conference, February 18th and 19th in Nashville again, where it will be for the next 9 years. And it was a great event as it was, especially for my first one. And I'm still super critical. So I found about a dozen holes in it that I'm going to fix for that nobody even saw. That's going to make the next one even more magical, quite honestly. That's what I think about every day. Mm-hmm. I wake up and think about that every day.
Do you have, let's say, a good amount of the same presenters that are coming to the next one?
We have a couple of returning presenters, and we have a couple of new ones. That's the way that it's always going to be with my conference. I want to try to have a couple of recurring and a couple new faces in the mix, and that rotation is going to keep coming back around. And I'd like to have people speaking multiple times across a multi-year time frame at the conference. But assembling I feel like I'm one of the few people that's positioned to assemble the cast of speakers the way that I assemble them, if that's fair. Maybe it's just my personal network, but it's shaped really well for public appearance, if that's fair.
Yeah.
We get a good variety of speakers that tell different stories that are all really, really valuable. And literally, I mean, I had people like pulling on my sleeve, just saying, dude, thank you for putting this together. I learned so much and I didn't even get to meet you, but I'm appreciative of what you did. Mm-hmm. So that part about it was really freaking awesome, Tom. That was the magic.
You and I kind of discussed a little bit about this before we started recording, and I shared with you the sentiment of in-person interaction being the most valuable part of going to these conferences. You know, I had to attend and speak at another one during the time of your last one here. And I said the exact same thing. I don't necessarily learn a lot from being at these conferences, but the in-person interaction is what makes it far more valuable than doing another podcast, for example.
Yeah. We confirm our human divinity when we get together with other people. And, you know, I think that's what our souls crave in this crazy, you know, digital age, you know, where I believe everything is going to go back to analog at some point. You know, I truly believe that I believe in my heart, and I know that I could be wrong, but I believe that AI is the end of the road for tech.
Interesting.
I don't think that we go any further. I think that if there's a next step, it's biometrics, something like that, right? Chip in the wrist or something like that. Humans aren't going to go for that.
Yeah.
Timestamp me. Mark that zero.
Yeah. Tony, is there anything that you know, in anticipation of a more analog age, is there anything that you do to prepare for that or train your skill set for that?
I spend a lot of time doing my analog things, Tom. I'm a cook. I'm a guitar player. I love my English Labrador Retriever, and I spend tons of time with him and my family, for God's sake. So it's like, that's where all of my strength comes from, you know, is literally being able to unplug, sit down with the guitar, unplug after you and I talk, and take my dog for a walk and listen to some music. And that's the stuff that makes, you know, that's the stuff that makes your heart feel good. And then once you compliment it and bring other people into the mix, then you've got a soul party, you know? So that's part of what makes, you know, the sense that we get when you and I walk into a full room and it's like, my people are here.
Yeah.
Let's go say hi, you know, who's out there, you know?
Exactly.
So that's a really special part of what I'm doing. That's why I'm following down this path of being a conference creator. You know, and I plan on making a splash in that industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really valuable to just even have the conversation to remind people that you need to go out, talk to other people, have that face-to-face interaction, and, you know, get out from behind your screens as valuable as they can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had to listen to that advice myself, and having taken it and felt the success, I give it out freely. I'm like, people, put the phones down, man. Go shake some hands.
Yeah.
Go kiss some people on the cheek and have a hug. You know, yeah, life will go better, I promise.
Yeah. So, Tony, those that might be interested, is all that information available at tgmacro.com?
You can find out everything you need about me and the Navigator at tgmacro.com. You can find me on Twitter at tgmacro. You can DM me and I'll get right back to you, you know, instantly. If you have any questions, there are samples on the website. You can listen to me and Jared on my Substack at tgmacro.substack.com is the Macro Dirt Podcast, where me and Jared try to compete with the likes of you people. And we're having a good time doing it. And that's where you guys can find me.
Excellent. Tony, thanks so much for your time today.
Tom, thanks for having me. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
I try, man. Thank you.